Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. Peter Schiff again. Ready to do another hour of Wall Street Unspun. We do the show live every Wednesday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. You can hear the show on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz, or on my website at www.europac.net. And, of course, I encourage callers. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. I would particularly like to get some calls from people who saw me on the Fox network today or yesterday. I want to find out if anybody is actually watching the new Fox Business Network. But I, you know, made my first two appearances this Tuesday and Wednesday, and I will be on every Tuesday and Wednesday between the hours of 2 and 4. And I'm seeming to get on, you know, three or four segments during that time period. Now, of course, next week I won't be able to be on Wednesday. I will be flying back from New Orleans. I will be back in time to do the radio show, but I will not be back in time to do the Fox show. I will be doing it on Tuesday, I believe, remote from New Orleans, and they'll probably have me on Thursday next week as opposed to Tuesday, either Thursday or Friday. But in general, I'll be on every Tuesday and Wednesday. These travel plans were made long before I had made that commitment to Fox. But I'm hoping people are watching it. I know a lot of cable stations haven't picked it up yet. And normally, you know, whenever I do a show, whether it's on CNBC or Bloomberg or, you know, normal Fox or CNN, I always get emails. I mean, most of them are flattering. I mean, the majority of people who email me basically give me a compliment or, you know, they say something favorable. But sometimes, you know, I piss somebody off and they say something negative. But I normally generate some type of reaction from people. Either they love me or they hate me. But, you know, and generally people email me to, you know, express either sentiment. But, you know, based on these two shows I did with Fox, and a couple of them were very contentious, particularly the one I did today with Mike Norman, and I can never have a decent discussion with Mike Norman. You know, I of all the people who I'm on television with who disagree with me, and which is most people, you know, usually they're polite enough to let me make my points. But with Mike Norman, it always turns into a shouting match because the guy just won't shut up. And he doesn't, you know, I'll start to talk and I'll barely get a sentence out and he jumps all over me. Now, he says some really stupid stuff, but, you know, I'm quiet and I let him finish making his idiotic points. I just want to have some time to rebut him. But the minute you bring something up, he jumps all over you. So that one I did today, if anybody saw that, I don't even know if people can hear because it always degenerates into a shouting match. And I told the people on Fox that they really need to either get this guy on a different segment so he's not on with me, or they've got to get him to understand that he's got to let people finish making their points because otherwise, you know, nobody can hear anything. And this guy, Mike Norman, has had some of the worst calls over the last 5 years. The guy has been bearish on oil, right? Since oil hit 50, he's been very bearish on oil. He's been very bearish on commodities and gold. He's been bullish on the U.S. dollar. He's been bullish on housing. In fact, if you want to see a very funny clip of me and Mike Norman on television, you know, it's on my website. But if you want, go to YouTube and use the search word housing bubble. On YouTube. Just enter in housing bubble and search. And then when it says sort by, click view count, right? Then you'll see them in order of the most views. And if you go down, and two or three of these videos feature me. Right? People have made various housing videos, and they feature me. In fact, if you go down the list, the one with a picture of David Lerner, like Pinocchio, that one features me. But then two down, right, This is the one with Mike Norman. It says Real Estate Predictions 2007, and it's got like a little tombstone. It looks like it says all real estate is local. And of course, that's from David Lurie's book. But click on that. It's number 10. Over 25,000 people have viewed that on YouTube. But it's very funny. But it shows me and this guy Mike Norman arguing about the housing bubble. And it's the one where I was warning about all the problems and the problems with lax lending standards and speculation. And Mike Norman was basically laughing at me, saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, everything is great. There are no defaults. And in December of 2006, he predicted that during this year, 2007, real estate prices would rise another 10%. That's how crazy this guy is. But anyway, you got to watch that. And if you have a chance, you can watch. If you didn't see it on Fox today live, it will be on the website. Now, if you didn't see me on Fox yesterday, yesterday's appearance is up on the website right now. So if you don't have the Fox Business Network on your cable system or you missed me, you can see yesterday's show. Now, yesterday I got into another argument with what's the guy's name again? The big guy. It escapes me, but it's the same guy that called me un-American before, and he made the same allegations again. You know, he didn't attack my patriotism. I mean, he's a lot more polite than Mike Norman in that he lets me make my points, but he's constantly attacking my patriotism. So you can see that discussion, and I think that argument had to do with the government gathering information from U.S. companies about American citizens, supposedly to help fight the war on terror. And, of course, he was all in favor of it and said it was a great thing that U.S. companies, you know, give the U.S. government any information they want about their customers. And, of course, I thought it was a bad idea. I thought that, you know, that the Constitution, that the Fourth Amendment, that privacy, the right to privacy, I thought these things were more important than the government's need to procure intelligence. And I said, you know, if we're going to give up all of our rights and if we're going to let the government collect all kinds of information on us, you know, what are we fighting for? And, you know, I said that I don't trust government. I said that I don't, you know, just because the government says they're going to use the money, you know, to find terrorists, that use the information to find terrorists, doesn't mean that that's the only thing that they can use the information for. Once they have the information, they can use it for any purpose against any individual. And we don't want the U.S. government to be able to gather all sorts of information on citizens of the United States. Who knows how they're going to use it? And I mentioned these concerns, and of course he went ranting and raving about how un-American I was. And I tried to point out that, you know, it's not un-American to be in favor of the Constitution, to be in favor of privacy. I said that and it's not un-American to be distrustful of government. I pointed out that the framers of this country, the framers of the Constitution, distrusted government. I mean, they called government a necessary evil. They warned us to be ever vigilant and not to surrender our liberties and our freedoms to get some temporary security, because in the end we would lose both. Of course, he's absolutely clueless on that. But anyway, that was yesterday. So if you happen to see that one, I know some calls are coming in, so I'm going to get to the phones. And then I want to remember by the next segment, I'm going to take a few of the calls now. By the next segment, I want to talk quite a bit about inflation, in particular, a very interesting exchange that I watched earlier in the week on CNBC. And then I want to talk about the CPI, the numbers that came out today on inflation, and also the housing. We got a lot of new data on housing. You know, many of the home builders today hit new 52-week lows. One of them, Standard Pacific, is now down to like $3. I remember once on air I made a prediction that all the stocks would go to $5, and one of them, Beazer is almost there. Beazer is around 8, but one of them is now down in the 3s. But a number of them are still in double digits, but I still think all these home builders are going to $5 a share or less. But we'll talk about the housing market as well. Let me quickly grab some of these calls. Fannie calling from New York. Go ahead, Fannie.
It's Fan Ying, but...
Fan Ying. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I like what you got, what you're doing. I'm already in the process of opening up one account. I just opened up two other accounts with different properties, like one's cash account, the other's an IRA.
And, huh?
Now, in my currently in my cash account, which is my existing account, which is an Ameritrade account, I've got four major stocks, which is they're all ETFs. They're all international. One's Canada. One is one is Asian Pacific without Japan, and one is China, FXI. Now, the thing is that, particularly with FXI, I'm wondering about the fact that the run-up has been just amazing. It's been going up really, really fast. And
yeah, look, there's been a lot of action in the Chinese names. You know, the emerging markets in particular are acting extremely speculative. I mean, I wrote about this and spoke about the bubble that is brewing in Chinese shares, and you know, it's continuing to inflate. I have no idea how much higher these stocks are going to go in a short run, but I do believe that there is a bubble forming. I don't know where the top is. I do believe there will be a major drop in mainland Chinese shares at some point. I just don't know when. So, you know, we do recommend some stocks to your Pacific Capital clients, but most of them are in Hong Kong. They are China plays. They earn revenues in China. They are also rising, but they're not rising at the rapid rates that we're seeing on these Chinese shares. So I would be very nervous about them. We're not encouraging a lot of our conservative investors to chase these momentum plays in China. But look, I mean, I'd rather see somebody, if you wanted to gamble and you wanted to buy a momentum stock rather than buying Google or Apple or, you know, one of the
machine does with a 10-foot pole.
If you're going to do it, you might as well go and buy the Chinese names because they're going up 2 and 3 times as fast.
Yeah, well, I'm not touching those stocks with a 10-foot pole. But the thing is that it's just getting I just don't want to get too greedy about it. And
look, we'll take something off the table and invest it more conservatively. The point is to keep your money out of the U.S. dollar. And, you know, you can have your money in foreign markets, and you can do it in a speculative way. You can chase momentum stocks and speculate, or you can do it more conservatively by buying utilities or REITs or, you know, the types of stocks that I buy in general or encourage my clients to buy.
Well, the thing is that because the amounts I'm talking about are not the largest, I feel that it's probably best to liquidate all that and transfer it to Europac and buy a more conservative that has a higher dividend yielding, which I can generate the same amount of returns that I can generate with speculative, but at least I'm getting real dollar, real foreign currencies as income.
No, definitely. And, you know, I wrote my book and I speak to my clients about the fact that I prefer to create my own portfolios. I prefer to buy the stocks that I like rather than leaving the selection criteria to somebody who I don't know. And I like to be assured that you know, the stocks that I own are those are the ones that I'm going to keep. You know, sometimes you buy a portfolio and they end up changing the stocks around. So I want to know what I own, and I think that's the best way to go. For some people who don't have your Pacific accounts, who don't have access to foreign markets, the ETFs might be the best available alternative that they have, but I don't think that's the best way to go.
No, I'm moving it all over to Europac recreating the portfolio there. Pretty much I'm transferring all 100% of my savings, invested savings in all my accounts and just consolidating into a Europac and just.
That sounds like a smart move.
And 100%. And
we'll appreciate the vote of confidence, and we'll do our best to help you.
I got my boss reading the book as well. I got my neighbor looking at it as well. So I'm spreading the word as fast as I could.
Yeah, you know, I had a couple that came down today from Connecticut, and you know, they're opening up an account, and they talk about how, you know, well, they gave the book to this person or that person. And yeah, I mean, the books are spreading around, and people are finding out. And I've encouraged my clients, you know, once you understand this and once you understand what's about to happen to the dollar and this economy, it's important that the information not stop with you. It's important that you reach out to the people around you, your friends and your family members, because you don't want to be the only one not to go broke.
Yeah.
Because if all your friends are broke, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, they're not going to be able to do anything with you. They're not going to have any extra money. So you're going to have to pick up every check every time you guys want to, you know, go out. And they're all going to be hitting you up for loans because they're going to know that you're the only one with any real money. So it's important that not only you not go broke, but those closest to you, those most important to you, not go broke either.
Yep.
So spread that book around. If you read the book, you know, have your friends and neighbors read it and buy a few extra copies. you know, we're running out of time. You know, it's time, you know, we don't have an infinite amount of time here, and, you know, time is running out, so people have to act and act quickly.
Yeah, I have a question. This one is actually a question that I, through my broker at Europac, basically when he was recommending me a number of stocks, his stocks were kind of more overweighted in Canada, and the thing is that I'm thinking I kind of want to have my spread around.
But, you know, you got to have this conversation. I don't want to have it on the air because I have a lot of other callers. But, you know, sometimes you get overweighted in Canada if you're buying a lot of the energy trusts. A lot of people who are looking for the really, really high yields, because a lot of those trusts are paying 12%, 18%, 20%. So sometimes when people need a lot of income out of their portfolios, they end up getting weighted into these Canadian trusts more heavily. But you got to have this conversation with your broker.
Okay.
But anyway, thanks very much for the call.
Okay.
And let me go to Sal from Fairfield, Connecticut. Go ahead, Sal.
Hey, Peter. How are you? First of all, I just want to applaud you, Peter, for your guts for stepping on CNBC there. You're doing a great job. And another thing I wanted to mention, I don't know how many listeners you have. I've called your office on probably three or four occasions and talked to your brokers there. Not once did they ask me my name, my email address. They didn't try to solicit your services to me. And I really applaud that, Peter. My big question for tonight is, what's your opinion on interest rates in the near future?
Well, you might applaud that. I don't. I wish that no one ever even took your name and signed you up for my free newsletter.
I tell you, Peter, I find that, you know, to be great that you weren't looking to solicit me with all kinds of emails and phone calls and...
Well, I mean, generally, look, when people call up, I'm hoping that somebody tries to tell them about the, you know, our services. I mean, we're not, you know, we're not just giving out information. I mean, I want to actually help people, and I would hope that if someone calls up one of my brokers, that they at least, you know, try to ask you who your name is and tell you what we do. I mean, that's what the job is. I know these guys are very busy because we're getting inundated with so many calls and so many emails that I guess a lot of my guys just don't have the time to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But as far as what our interest rate's going to do?
Right.
Yeah, look, they're going to go up. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter what the Fed does, right? Interest rates are going up. You know, I mean, it's just, in fact, they are going up. Go try to borrow money to buy a house. The rates are a lot higher than they were a few months ago. You know, rates are going up for ordinary Americans. Now, they haven't gone up much for the U.S. government. They're still able to borrow pretty cheap. But those days are going to end, too, because, you know, the people that are doing the lending are the Europeans, the Asians, you know, the Saudis, the Chinese. I mean, they're not going to keep lending us money because we're not paying them back. You know, the dollar keeps losing value, and it's losing value even more than you can see. I mean, if you look at where the dollar index is, you know, it's pretty low at around 78, but a lot of the currencies that are not in the dollar index, a lot of other Asian currencies, are really moving up. You can't see it because they don't trade futures contracts here, and they're not in the dollar index. But the dollar is getting beaten up almost every day. And the people in Asia, these are the ones that are holding the lion's share of our debt, and they're really starting to take a hit. And so they're not going to want to loan us any more money. It's just it's a lousy deal for them.
And the housing market, you know, the bubble, you predicted that. What's your prediction on the stock market? When's that bubble going to burst?
I mean, look, I think it already burst. You just can't see it because the dollar is so weak. You know, the New York Times ran an article over the weekend. I put it up on my website, and it says, you know, U.S. market's done well except by comparison. And it looks at the U.S. market since the lows of 2002. So over the last 5 years, and the U.S. market has gone up about 15% a year. The last 5 years. But it points out that of the 84 markets around the world that were in the survey, the U.S. was number 79 out of 84. And the only countries that were worse than the U.S. market were small islands in the Caribbean. That every other market outperformed the U.S. by at least a factor of two, meaning most markets did at least 30% a year. And there were plenty of markets that did 50% a year, 70% a year, 80% per year. That's how lousy the U.S. market has done. In fact, over the last 5 years, priced in anything but dollars, the U.S. market has gone down. It's gone down in terms of gold. It's gone down in terms of euros. It's gone down in terms of Canadian dollars or Australian dollars. It's gone down in terms of oil. It's gone down in terms of wheat. It's gone down in terms of eggs or milk. Or, you know, you name it, the U.S. stock market has lost value against it. The only thing that it's gone up against is the dollar, and that's because the dollar is going down. So I think the bubble has already burst. And, you know, on the housing market, it's interesting. I was listening on CNBC today. They were talking about a survey or some economic forecasters, and apparently every single housing recession has always produced a overall recession in the U.S. economy. However, they're forecasting that this is going to be the first time in history that we have a housing recession, but the general economy escapes recession. We're going to miss it for the first time. And, you know, it dawns on me when I'm listening to this. Since this is the biggest housing bust ever, except maybe the Great Depression, but it's certainly bigger than anything since the Depression. Since all these much smaller housing busts in the past all produced a recession, why wouldn't the biggest housing bust of them all also produce a recession? Why should this be the one time when we don't have a recession? When this is the biggest bubble bursting, the worst real estate downturn we've ever experienced. It makes no sense.
Well, it's the illusional world that we're in, I think.
That's it, delusion. As I said, I think we're already in a recession. The only reason we can't see it is because the government underestimates what inflation really is, and when they do that, they overestimate growth. But again, if you measure the U.S. economy in a different currency, we're in a recession. We're in a huge recession. It's only when you measure it in dollars that you can't see reality. But anyway,
any opinion on Google, up or down from here?
Oh, look, it's probably going to keep going up until it collapses. But, you know, as I said, I wouldn't buy it. If you want to gamble, just pick any Chinese stock that's going up and buy it instead. But I wouldn't want to buy Google.
Hey, Peter, thank you so much. Great job.
Thank you. Hey, we've got a few callers on hold. Let me take a quick commercial break, and we will be back for the rest of the call.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back, and let's take a call from Ken in California. Go ahead, Ken.
Peter, a couple of weeks ago, a Canadian bank bought up an East Coast branch banking system.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week, Bear Stearns shares are up on news that there's a bunch of Chinese investors interested in purchasing a stake in Bear Stearns. Do you think that foreign investing groups, you know, these sovereign wealth funds, will come in and, in a sense, bail out the U.S. financial concerns and keep...
No, I don't think they're going to bail out anything. They might buy out a lot of our assets when they get very cheap, but they're not going to bail anything out. Now, I think some of these investments in the financials, like the banks and the brokerage firms, are very, you know, ill-advised and bad uses of the money in these sovereign wealth funds. I mean, they should leave that sector alone. What these sovereign wealth should be buying is real companies. They should be buying more substantial U.S. multinationals, you know, the big name Dow stocks that are global in scope, and they will. Eventually, I believe, the majority of the stocks in the Dow Jones will be owned lock, stock, and barrel by foreigners, and they will probably be delisted, and they will not even trade on the New York Stock Exchange anymore. So companies like Procter & Gamble and Caterpillar, you know, these companies will just be owned by, you know, somebody in some other country, and they won't even trade here anymore. And they're going to be bought dirt cheap. I mean, they're going to be bought when, you know, when they're really down and the dollar is way down. But, you know, they made the high-profile investment in Blackstone. I mean, that was a complete waste of money for the Chinese. But what people have to understand, what these sovereign wealth funds are, They're vehicles for getting rid of dollars. They're vehicles for divesting themselves of U.S. dollars, because what happens is the central bank transfers U.S. dollars into these sovereign wealth funds. And now it's the job of the portfolio managers to get rid of these dollars and get something else.
I just wanted to, for the financial stocks, I hear that they're very low right now. They can only go higher. Do you
think they're not low. They're still high, and they can go a lot lower. See, when people say the financials are low, they're talking about based on PEs. But they're talking about trailing earnings or projections for earnings that are not going to materialize. These companies are in serious trouble. The financials, you want to avoid them like the plague.
Now, today, Washington Mutual came out. They said they were down 70%, but no problem with the share price. You know, there wasn't a...
Whatever. There's no problem now. You know, they're ticking time bombs. You know, it took a long time for the home builders to go down. You know, for a couple of years, it was obvious that there was a housing that turned around, yet some of these home builders still went up and made new highs. They were in denial until about a year ago. So, you know, sometimes the markets can defy logic in the short run. Because remember, the majority of the people who are investing money are completely clueless. They don't know anything. You know, they're just like these guys that I'm debating on CNBC and Fox. They don't know a thing. And they're the ones that are making the decisions to buy or sell. And these are the same guys that bid up the NASDAQ to 5,000 in 1999 and 2000. They're the same guys that bought all these dot-coms. They don't know what they're doing. They're just...
What about this exciting news of this brand new super fund, the super conduit that Paulson has created along with...
Again, I mean, that is, it's nothing. What's happening is banks are going to be contributing about $80 billion into a pool, which is going to go and buy the highest quality mortgage-backed securities. They're not going to buy anything backed by subprime, which is the lion's share of the problem right now, and they're not going to buy anything that isn't at least AA rated. So, you know, it's not going to make that big of a difference. And again, you know, they're going to buy these things in the market. It doesn't mean that the problem's going to go away. It just means the ownership of some of these bonds is going to transfer from one person to another. But, you know, all the risk is still going to be there. So they're not accomplishing anything. It's all a bunch of PR.
Well, who's going to buy these subprime stuff? Isn't that the idea they're trying to...
No one's going to buy the subprime stuff. It's going to default because the people who took out the mortgages aren't going to make the payments. They're just going to walk away from their loans. It's just they have no... You know, that's the beauty of the no down payment loan from the point of view of the buyer. When you put nothing down, and if the property market goes against you, you walk away. It's like a put option. You know, you don't exercise your put if it's like a call option. If you have a call option and the stock goes down and not up, you don't exercise it. So when you buy a house with nothing down, you don't keep making your payments if the stock goes down.
I think the guy you asked about earlier, you didn't remember his name, that was debating you. I think his name is Charles Payne.
Charles Payne, yeah, that's the guy, Charles Payne.
And I just watched another interview with him, I don't think you were involved in it, where he was saying that the U.S. government should come in, Sallie Mae and Freddie Mae, all that stuff, should come in and raise the FHA minimum on, you know, up to $600,000 for homes they'll finance.
All these guys, of course, that's just socializing the losses. And, you know, he's supposedly a Republican. You know, he talks about limited government and get government away. Yet what do these guys propose? Big government, more government, government solutions, government bailouts. You know? Anyway, thanks.
Do you see a point where the financials will hit a low? And if so, when, do you think?
I have no clue when they're going to hit a low. I don't even care. I'm not even paying attention. Don't even leave them on your screen.
Thank you, Peter.
Much better things to buy. Thanks.
No.
Anyway, I got Dan. Dan from California.
Hello, Peter. It's a pleasure to talk to you once again. I have a question. I'm in California, as you mentioned, and I'm really concerned that the CalPERS, California Public Employees Retirement System, is probably shot through with these mortgage-backed securitized debts, since a lot of it originated here.
I'm sure they own a bunch of it.
Yeah. If they do, they're working to a charter, and if that their securitized debt, their mortgage-backed securitized debt and collateralized debt obligations, if these things fall below a certain threshold of grade, if they're downgraded to a certain threshold, won't they have to expose to the public that they have a lot of this debt and that they're that.
Well, I mean, I don't know what the rules are in this CalPERS, but if they're not allowed to hold bonds that are below a certain credit quality, and these mortgage-backed bonds that they have get downgraded below that credit quality, then they're required to sell them. Now, of course, by the time they're required to sell them, there will be few, if anybody, willing to buy them.
Right.
So, yeah, look, there's a lot of problems. And what you got to do if you live in California, I mean, don't count on any kind of government-sponsored retirement. You got to do whatever you can to save your own money and put it aside and get it out of the country, get it out of the dollar, and get it into something sound, because there's a good chance that whatever, you know, the CalPERS guys are buying for you is just going to, you know, be practically worthless.
Yes, that's right. And that goes to my second question, and I'll make this brief. There was a guy back in 99-2000 around. His name was Harry S. Dent. Now, his platform was the idea that the biggest boom is going to come in the 2000s because the baby boomer generation is going to be at their peak earning and spending years, but they'll start to retire en masse around 2009. The first baby boomer officially signed up for Social Security with a recent fanfare in the last couple of days. And I was just wondering what you thought about that idea. And are you?
Well, I think I don't think there's going to be a huge wave of retirement. I think the baby boom is not going to retire. The baby boom is going to be in the workplace until the last one dies. You know, unfortunately, they don't have any retirement savings. If they think they do, they don't. And I think a lot of people who are even retired right now in a few years are going to be back in the workforce. You know, the people who are retired live off the value of the dollar. You know, they live off their savings, and the dollar is going to get wiped out. I mean, there's no hope for the dollar. I mean, even if the government does everything right at this point, the dollar could still lose 50% or more of its value. But that's if the government does everything right, which means, you know, allowing a lot of people to lose their homes and to lose their jobs and allowing a lot of companies, banks, and brokerage firms to fail. The government has to let a lot of people lose a lot of money. They have to let the economy go through a severe recession. And that's the only hope for the dollar to lose only half its value. But if the government tries to prevent all these bad things from happening, the dollar will lose almost all of its value. And, you know, in that scenario, I mean, the people who are going to get hurt the most are going to be the people who were planning on retiring.
Yeah. And on that note regarding the dollar, I know that you're very bullish on precious metals and you have margin and that you have a lot of precious metals mining stocks. And I know that gold particularly has been on a tear lately. I was lucky enough to buy some gold eagles around $300 each back in 99-2000 near the bottom. But at this point, which do you think would be a better buy? Do you think gold is still the best or do you think silver has yet to break out?
Well, I think silver will break out. I own both metals. I own mining companies in both. But, you know, I do think that, you know, historically, silver is a monetary metal as well as gold. Although I think that in today's environment, there are less reasons to need silver as money. I think gold can function. In the past, one of the reasons that silver was, you know, money alongside of gold was that it was hard to break gold up into small enough quantities so that when you wanted to deal in minor transactions, silver coins were preferable to gold coins because the gold coins would be too small. But now that, you know, really I don't think we're going to go back to a monetary system where everybody's walking around with gold. I think it's more likely that gold will be deposited in banks and we will have debit cards. Then I think that, you know, people can spend gold down to a gram. And it would be very easy to do so. So maybe silver won't have the monetary, push that it might have had in the past. But I still am pretty bullish, and I think silver has yet to break out. And I think if you look at the historic ratios between gold and silver, silver looks cheap relative to gold.
Yes, absolutely. I thought I'd just mention, just quickly, that Benjamin Franklin made a great quote. You might be able to tell Charles Payne, "Those who would give up liberty for security deserve neither."
Yeah.
They get tyranny.
Yeah.
They get tyranny. Okay. Thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it, Peter. You're doing a
good thing, Dan.
Okay. Bye.
And I know we got Art in New York. Go ahead, Art.
Yeah. Hey, Peter. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for the call.
Sure. The guy that just spoke, Dan, was talking about retirement, and that's kind of what my question is about. I was planning to retire, like, in the end of 08, but reading what you had written and listening to you on the show, I'm thinking I should get out of there earlier because most of my money is tied up in retirement plans, 403Bs.
Yeah, if you do not have the option within your plan of moving that retirement money into some type of foreign assets, precious metals, commodities, foreign bonds, or something like that, yes, it would make sense to retire early just so you can roll that money into an IRA and take control over it and protect it.
Mm-hmm.
You can always go back to your employer potentially and say, look, this is what I need to do. And maybe you can come back after, you know, and work on a part-time basis or work on a consulting basis if you need to work for another year or two. But if you can't and you have to take a part-time job or a job someplace else for a year or two, depending on how big that nest egg is, I think there's a lot of reasons to try to do what you can to protect it, because over the next couple of years, you can lose far more of your wealth as the dollar collapses than you might gain in wages.
Here's where I'm at. I need to give 9 months' notice, and I get an early retirement bonus. So I don't want to give that up. So the earliest I could go is mid-July. And, again, I'm waiting that time out. And, again, the things that you're saying may happen in that time period. You see where I'm at?
Yeah. Well, what you got to do is, you know, I mean, those are the predicaments you're in. Now, maybe you can find some way of hedging. Maybe you can open a commodities account, or maybe you can get long, or you know, buy some precious metals on leverage, or buy something,
mm-hmm.
hedge that in some way. But it's a little bit complicated situation, and maybe there's a way that you can move those funds. Even before, leave, retire, I don't know. You got
to. Yeah, well, I already moved an IRA over to you, okay? I mean, in fact, the first positions were bought today in it. But, again, that's only like 10%, and the other 90% is locked up. I guess if the choice is between retiring in July and waiting till the end of 08, I'm better off going earlier.
Well, I would go as early as possible for the best on it. In the meantime, see if there's something within your employer's plan that you can switch to.
It's limited. There's a basic, like, you know, United States domestic index fund. There is an EAFE index fund, which I've started to shift a lot of stuff to just to get it out. And they don't hedge the currency, so I guess that's good. But otherwise, I'm limited. I mean, there's a money market fund. There's a TIPS fund. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, because the tips are worthless because they're tied to the CPI. Which
right.
Is
but even for the next 6 months, that wouldn't make sense either, huh?
No.
Just the dollar really
just
falls.
Buy the foreign, whatever that foreign thing is, just buy it. You know.
Just buy it and wait it out until July. And
yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay. All right. Let me quickly take Tyler in California. Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, how you doing, Peter? Listen, I was curious to see how that $100 billion pool that they're getting together, will that make any difference? Will that kind of help things out a little bit, at least in the...
Oh, you mean the $80 billion pool? Yeah, I mean, somebody else mentioned it, and no, it won't make a difference. I mean, it might make a slight difference to the people who are able to sell their bonds to this pool, because I'm sure whatever price the pool pays is more than these things are actually worth. So it might make a bit of a difference to some of the creditors who are able to unload their bonds into this pool at a price that's better than they might have been able to get absent the pool. But it's not going to do anything to help the housing market. It's not going to cause housing prices to stop falling. It's not going to cause lending standards to continue to tighten. It's not going to stop the wave of defaults that are coming. None of this is going to make any difference.
But it could it potentially give it more time, or I mean,
it might look if it might buy a little bit more time. But it's, you know, the more time that we buy, the worse we make it. I mean, the longer homes are able to maintain these artificially high levels, you know, the more debt they can get accumulated, or the longer debt is mispriced, the more distortions are being created in the economy. So all these efforts of the government to prevent market forces from operating, the more we delay it, the worse we make it.
All right.
That's unfortunate.
Go ahead. I also have one more question. This really isn't anything I'm involved in, but the guy was talking before about CalPERS, about the California Retirement Fund for, state people or teachers. Aren't they guaranteed certain money? Even if let's say theoretically CalPERS went to zero, Don't the taxpayers still aren't on the hook to pay those retirements?
Yeah, maybe they are. I don't know what the rules are, but that would be very unfortunate for the citizens of California. But, you know, there's nothing that stops them from leaving the state. And so those are problems. I mean, government promises, which are based on our ability to collect taxes from their citizens, are not necessarily, you know, that reliable because the citizens can leave. You know, and if you look at these huge obligations and unfunded pensions and all the things that, you know, if California has to raise their income tax to 20% or 30% in order to make good on these promises, I don't think anyone's going to be left in the state to pay the taxes. So, you know, I wouldn't take comfort in that fact.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. But what do you see? I mean, I've asked you this before, but as things are kind of coming along, kind of what you've written about, how bad would you see things in the future? I mean, like, even if the dollar falls...
It's going to get very bad, you know, and it's amazing, too. I mean, how many things I've said and how many things I've predicted that are just all coming true, yet so few people on these television shows where I've made these predictions can even acknowledge the accuracy of what I'm saying. And what they keep focusing on is the fact that I'm negative on the U.S. economy, and they say, but it's still growing, so you're wrong. And I'm negative on the U.S. stock market, and they say, but the U.S. stock market is still going up, therefore Dr. Doom is wrong. And what they don't understand is that I'm right, that the U.S. economy is not going up, that the U.S. stock market is not going up. The dollar is going down, and our economy is shrinking. Yet they can't see it because they're blinded by the dollar. All they can see is nominal prices, and they have no clue what's actually going on. But they refuse to compare the U.S. stock market to any of the things that I'm telling people to buy instead of the U.S. stock market. Then they could appreciate what's really happening. You have to step away and look at it from another perspective. You know, you can't appreciate the bubble from inside. You have to step outside the bubble, and then you can see it.
All right. Thank you very much, Peter. That's all the questions I have.
Great. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Mike.
Another commercial break, and we'll be back, and I want to talk a little bit about the inflation numbers.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. Anyway, you know, earlier this week I was watching on CNBC, and I think this is what I'm going to be writing my commentary about, which will be on my website by Friday. But I was watching Becky Quick, who's one of the morning hosts, and she was interviewing a guy, and I don't remember the guy's name, but he was pretty sharp. And they were talking about oil and inflation. And the guy correctly pointed out, the guest, to Becky Quick, that rising oil prices don't cause inflation. He said that, you know, if the price of oil goes up and people spend more of their money on oil, they simply spend less money on other things, and so prices fall someplace else, so that overall prices are not affected, which is 100% correct. And so then Becky Quick basically asked the question, which I wish this guy would have answered, because I believe he could have answered it, but he ignored it. Becky said, well, if rising oil prices don't cause inflation, what does? And that was a very interesting question. What causes inflation? She seems to be clueless as to what causes inflation. She thought it was oil prices. Now, the answer, of course, the answer that I would have given her, in fact, I probably have given it to her, but she probably doesn't pay attention when I talk, is that the Federal Reserve causes inflation. What causes prices to rise on aggregate is an increase in the money supply. And who increases the money supply? The Federal Reserve. So rather than oil prices causing inflation, the oil prices that we've seen, the big oil price increases that we've experienced, of course, have been the result of inflation. And, of course, you know, we got the numbers today on inflation, the CPI, you know, and, of course, the government is telling us that prices are up year over year about, what, 2-point-something percent. You know, the core rate was up 2.1%, and the headline rate was maybe 2.8 or 2.9. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. If anybody believes that prices are only up 2.9%, you know, if you look at the breakdown, right, the government is telling us that energy prices, the energy component of the CPI, in the last 12 months is up 5.4%. 5.4%. Now, I looked 12 months ago at prices. Crude oil prices are up more than 35% in the last 12 months. 35%. Heating oil prices are up 20% in the last 12 months. Now, natural gas prices, they're down about 6%. So there are some components. But if you take a 35% increase, a 20% increase, and you throw in a 6% decrease, you know, the way I do that math, and I don't see how there's any way that energy prices are only up 5.4%. It just seems completely impossible. If you look at what the government says, medical costs are up in the last 12 months. The government says medical costs are up 3%. Well, that's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I pay the insurance, the medical insurance for the company every year. And every single year, the increase in my premium is usually 10 to 12%, sometimes more. It's never less. Maybe one year it was 8 or 9%, and they told me I got lucky that year. But I've never, ever seen my health care costs rise by anywhere close to the 3% that the government claims is the increase in medical care. Now, one of the most ridiculous ones is food. According to the CPI, food prices in the last 12 months are up 4.5%. 4.5%. I mean, that, if you even look at the prices that you're paying in the supermarket versus a year ago, I mean, wheat prices have more than doubled in the last year, you know, as a commodity. Look at the other, but look at the prices for things like dairy products, for eggs, for milk, for cheese. Look at the price of bread and pasta. Look at the price we're paying for meats and produce, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables. I mean, I don't know anything that I buy that isn't at least 20% more expensive this year than it was last year. I don't know how it's possible that the U.S. government can claim that the cost of food is up 4.5%. Now, those are the biggest increases. You know, the other things that they have in there, you know, according to the government, apparel prices are down 1.5%. Their clothing is 1.5% less expensive. Now, I don't buy clothes on an often enough basis, and I, of course, I don't always buy the same clothes, so I don't really know what's happened to the price of a shirt or a pair of pants, because, of course, you don't buy the identical. I mean, I go and I buy the same types of food products and the same types of energy products every single year, so I can really tell. But based on what I'm buying in clothing, I really don't know whether clothes are getting, and I usually buy clothes on sale. I usually wait for the sales. And they usually have pretty good ones, so I can't really tell if they're being honest there or not. But on the things that I can experience in real life, I know what I'm paying for food, I know what I'm paying for energy, I know what I'm paying for medical care, and the rate of increases that I'm experiencing in my everyday life dwarf, absolutely dwarf, what the government claims. And I don't see why other people on Wall Street can't look at this. And they keep talking about how great, how low our inflation is, how everything is great because inflation is so low. Meanwhile, inflation is running rampant. I mean, I would guess that the inflation that we're experiencing right now is as bad as anything that we experienced during the 1970s, for sure. You know, if they calculated inflation in the 1970s the way we do now, they wouldn't have had any inflation back then either. And people are pointing to, oh, no, but you have to offset these higher costs because, you know, the price of computers is dropping and the price of cell phones is dropping. Well, you know, in the 1970s, I'm sure calculator prices were coming down. Digital watch prices were coming down. I forget what we used to use in the 1970s. But I'm sure there were electronic components and certain gadgets that were getting cheaper in the 1970s as well. That doesn't have anything to do with it. Anyway, so I'm gonna write my commentary this time about those Becky Quick comments and about the disingenuous CPI numbers. You know, even if you know the government says X food and energy, you know, but even with food and energy prices, the CPI is way, way understating it because the government is lying about what's happening with food and energy prices. They're just, they are just massaging these numbers. Somehow, when the government gets through hedonically adjusting it and geometrically weighting all these prices, whatever they're doing, they're taking huge increases in the price of food and energy and medical care and making those increases into just minor changes. Anyway, let me quickly go back to the calls. I've got Rick, I think... from California. Is Rick there? Rick? All right, let's go to Nash from Las Vegas.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank you. I have a couple of questions. On August 16th this year, when the markets globally started to decrease in value, do you think that was more of a result of the reverse of the yen carry trade as the interest rates in Japan increased? Because if people are borrowing money from Japan and then transferring it to the U.S. and then euro and other currencies, you're having global inflation occurring. So aren't the malinvestments occurring abroad first and then it will come back to the U.S. so the dollar index should actually...
Well, I mean, there are certainly malinvestments being made all around the world, but I think the big drops that we saw in July had to do with unwinding of leveraged transactions, whether it was yen carry trade related or just other leveraged transactions. And many of the stocks that I own had very sharp drops in July. But the stocks that had the biggest drops had the biggest recoveries in August. I mean, there's this one oil stock we own in Singapore that, you know, had a big, like, 30% decline. And then, you know, in the last, you know, now all of a sudden it's almost doubled. And several of the stocks that went down very dramatically in July, you know, have gained everything back double. I mean, it's been unbelievable. So I, what it looked like to me was that there was a lot of forced sales. People were forced to get rid of these stocks in a very short period of time, and the prices dropped. And then when those forced sales were over, buyers came back to the market, and there were no sellers, and the prices just went ballistic. But, you know, fortunately, there are still some of the stocks that we've been buying that are below their where they were before the sell-off. There's not many anymore, but there are a few. And so people who are still on the sidelines need to commit their money before all these stocks make new highs.
You also say to get out of dollar-based assets, but isn't gold dollar-based? So
no, gold, it's not. Never. There's a difference between dollar-based and dollar-priced. A dollar-based asset would be an asset where the earnings from the asset are U.S. dollars. So and so if you own a U.S. Treasury bond or a bond denominated in dollars, you've got a dollar asset because it's going to pay you dollars. It's going to pay you interest in dollars, and it's going to pay off the principal in dollars. If you own a corporation in the United States, you know, the earnings are mostly in U.S. dollars if it's a, you know, a domestic company. And the dividends that they promise to pay are in U.S. dollars, you know, their revenues. If you own a REIT, if you own real estate in the United States, all the rents that you've that you're going to collect are all in dollars. So those are dollar denominated. You know, now when you own an asset in another country, you know, where the rents are in euros, you know, now you have a euro denominated. But something that's just dollar priced, like gold or oil or corn or wheat, these are not dollar assets. Because if you own gold, you can sell your gold in any currency in any country in the world. And so if the dollar loses value, gold is just going to go up. But if you own a dollar denominated asset, when the dollar loses value, it doesn't go. It doesn't have to go up at all. It could just stay the same, which means you're losing. So, if you own, you know, if you own an oil company in the United States, I don't consider that a dollar-denominated asset because that company can sell its oil all over the world, okay. And it can, you know, and it, so, and if you own a mining company, you know, the gold, it's not just because it's being priced in dollars doesn't mean that is dollar denominated because their income potential is from selling gold into global markets. You follow me?
Yes, Peter. Thank you for your help.
Sure thing.
Bye.
And let's take the last call of the day, Lynn from New York.
Hi, Peter.
Is Lynn on the line?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can.
Great. Yeah, I hope that there's enough time to answer this question, but a lot of commentators have been talking lately about the possibility of capital controls if the dollar really starts to spiral down out of control. And can you please explain what are capital controls? What effect will that have on...
Controls would do would basically be to prohibit what I'm encouraging my clients to do now. And
that was what I was afraid you said we're going to say,
Yeah, so if you're going to follow my advice, you need to follow it before capital controls are imposed. And what they're talking about is legally preventing American citizens from acquiring foreign assets. They would prevent Americans from selling their dollars. That is probably the most immediate threat on a capital control, which would mean if you own dollars, you have no choice but to invest them here in the United States. You cannot buy a stock in Australia or New Zealand or Canada or Europe like we're now doing. So that's one form of capital control. The other form of capital control would be preventing foreigners from acquiring American assets. Telling foreigners that you can't use your dollars to buy General Motors or to buy Procter & Gamble or Merck, or you can't use your dollars to buy U.S. real estate. You know, that would be another form. But probably the most immediate threat to Americans would be the first case, where they prevent you from divesting yourself of dollars and force you to go down with the ship. Now, the worst form of capital controls, which I certainly hope wouldn't come in, would be if the U.S. government required Americans who already own foreign assets to turn them in to the U.S. government, you know, kind of like an eminent domain. They might come to my clients, Euro Pacific Capital clients, and say, hey, you've got all this money, and the country is really in trouble. The country needs your euros. The country needs your Australian dollars. So we're going to confiscate your brokerage account for the good of society. And, of course, we're going to compensate you. We're going to give you dollars. So here's a check for some dollars, and we're going to take those foreign assets. Now, I mean, if that happens, then we're screwed. I mean, I hope that doesn't happen. But if you're really concerned about that kind of outright confiscation of your foreign assets, then what you got to do is you got to actually move your assets physically offshore. You got to deal with a broker outside the United States, and I can't help you with that.
Well, listen, if that happened, though, I mean, if your assets were in some other country and you were here and they had these controls, you wouldn't be able to access them in that example.
No, you can access them. You can. I mean, if you have an account with me at Euro Pacific Capital, you can access your assets whenever you want. You just call me up and we trade. The capital controls would make it illegal. So if the government said no more investing internationally, then I would not be allowed by law to take your dollars and invest them abroad. It would be, they could put me in jail. I wouldn't be able to do it. In fact, Pershing, my clearing firm, would probably not allow me to do it. They would say American accounts are not allowed to invest in foreign assets. They can only invest here. And if we didn't cooperate, you know, they can shut me down or they can throw me in jail. So that's how it would stop. But that's how they would do it.
And, are you of the opinion that this is a likely scenario?
Well,
if you have an,
I do at some point the U.S. government will probably put some type of capital controls on. I don't know whether they will say it's illegal for Americans to move their money out of the U.S. They might say no more than $5,000 a year or $10,000 a year. They might do something. I'm hoping, that the courts will not allow outright confiscation of foreign assets that are already in the possession of American citizens. But they very well might pass laws to slow down the rate at which Americans can divest themselves of dollars. Because once Americans are trying to get rid of their dollars, it's really going to, you know, turn this thing into an avalanche. And the dollar's just going to be collapsing when even American citizens don't want them. So the government might try to do what it can to force us to keep them. But that's another reason why you need to act quickly and open up your account before it's too late. Anyway, we're running out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you haven't bought my book, Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse, make sure and do so. You can do it on my website at www.europac.net or on Amazon or any bookstores. thanks for listening. I will be back again next week. I'll see some of you in New Orleans. Take care.